Good evening.
Good evening.
Welcome to the spring practice focus. For many years, for many decades, we've been having times called practice period here at Warm Jewel Temple. And so this is pretty much the same thing. We're just experimenting with names this year, calling it a practice focus. Maybe a little bit shorter than the practice periods we've been having. But I think we could still call it the 47th practice kind of event. That's a lot of things like this that we've done here over the years. And it's a time, it's a setting aside a time to focus, more wholeheartedly on Zen practice. Going back to the Buddha's time when the Buddha set aside times for more focused practice. And, one time I asked my teacher, Tenzin Roshi, wouldn't it be best if we could just be in practice period all the time? And he said, no, I don't think so. And he said, us humans, we naturally have like rhythms where we concentrate more deeply on something, and then we kind of step back and relax a little bit like breathing, right? Maybe he heard my question as, wouldn't it be best to just like only breathe in? No, that wouldn't be so good. We need these times of inhaling and fully holding our breath with concentration and diligence, and then we have times for just breathing out fully and relaxing. So that's kind of what practice periods or practice focuses, foci, would that be the word? Practice foci would be about is setting up a time to kind of focus more so that we can relax afterwards. Just to feel that natural rhythm. It's nice. We get to see ourselves. It's a way to study ourselves and study our mind to set up these kind of rhythms. And we could look at a practice focus like this as having an outer aspect, an inner aspect, and an innermost aspect. The outer practice focus is the one that we maybe think of as that, the one that's like listed on the bulletin board and the website with certain dates and certain practice commitments. Here some of you have done this, design your own practice commitment for the practice focus. Like we could call this the outer form. The outer practice focus is certain things that we try to focus on. People signing up for the practice focus this time, we're asking for this 5-week period, let's sit zazen, sitting meditation, 5 days a week for at least 20 minutes at home or in the zendo here. So some people might be used to doing that already, and that might be like a huge stretch. Some people might just sit once a week. So this is kind of not for the rest of your life, but just for 5 weeks this time where you can commit to sit. And for those who didn't sign up for and design their own kind of practice focus, you're welcome to try this out too. Have some time. 20 minutes is too long, could be even shorter. It's about regularity. It's about coming back to the present, which can be done in many ways, but in our family style, our main way is just silently, unmovingly, just sitting in the midst of our present experience. So nourishing, I think, if we take that up as a regular practice, we can reassess at the end of 5 weeks and see how it's going. And then we also within those commitments is some sitting with the Sangha. It's good to sit at home some, I think, sit on our own. I think for people who, some people maybe only sit with the Sangha, then it's maybe kind of nice to not sit with the Sangha some, to see what it's like to sit alone and see if 20 minutes seems like eternity if we're sitting alone. It's easy, right, when we just surrender to the bell ringer, but if nobody's around and we're just sitting, well, 5 minutes, good enough. Nice thing about sitting alone. You get to see, there's nobody monitoring us or encouraging us. That can be good practice too. And then we have a whole slew of Dharma events, studying, Zen, meeting to talk about practice, and Sesshin retreat at the end, and so on. This is the outer practice focus. We might say, well, what more could there be? But I would propose we could also look at the inner practice focus, inner practice period. And this could be for all of us, anyone, who, even if you haven't signed up or thought about treating the next 5 weeks as a particular focal time. The inner practice focus could be just keeping the basic discipline of the Bodhisattva precepts. This is in our family style, the way we harmonize with others is through these Bodhisattva precepts. There's a Bodhisattva precept of embracing and sustaining right conduct, or standards of conduct. And this is just trying to pay attention to ways we might hurt others through our body, speech, and even mind, even our thoughts about others. So it's a nice opportunity. We can take 5 weeks and just throughout the day, even if we're not sitting any zazen meditation, just we're always interacting with other people, right? You know, we can look at this time period. Hopefully we're doing this maybe always, anyway, trying not to harm others. But for these 5 weeks, let's really look at the ways we harm others out of a kind of self-protection or a self-cherishing, or putting our own self-concern above others in a way that might actually harm them. So that's embracing and sustaining right conduct. There's also embracing and sustaining all good. That's not so much refraining from harm, but actually doing activities that may be beneficial, like practicing generosity. Somebody asks for something and if it's not too big, maybe if we're on the fence, maybe we can say, okay, Yeah, you can have that. I'll give you that. Like generosity and kindness and patience with others. And then there's also embracing and sustaining all beings. It means just remembering our loving connection with everyone. So this is a kind of inner practice focus. It's not on the sign up sheet. Like there's no box to check off for like generosity. We could do that, but this is more just like an inner attitude and remembering to that I think we all want to be in harmony with others anyway. We don't need convincing. Probably nobody thinks, I actually want to practice non-generosity this month. So we're probably all on board with it, but it's easy to forget, right? So that's what's nice about a practice focus. It's like a time. Let's focus even more on these virtues and non-harm. And then if that's the outer, the sign-up sheet version of the practice focus, the inner is like the discipline of bodhisattva conduct. The innermost retreat. The innermost practice focus. Maybe we could even say the secret practice focus. Not secret because we're trying to keep it a secret, but more just like it's kind of hidden. It's so indescribable. It doesn't have the form of numbers of periods of zazen or particular virtues or ways of refraining from harming others. Conduct that can be seen. This is kind of like unseen kind of practice focus, the innermost one. And that's the topic for the class series that will start this Sunday. Class series called Radiant Light. Dogen, our medieval Japanese founder, wrote an essay called Radiant Light, Kōmyō. And we could say, abiding as radiant light, resting as radiant luminosity is the inner practice focus we could take up if we want. All three, the outer, inner, and innermost secret practice foci, all, of course, are wrapped into one and all mutually support each other. So this one, the practice focus for 5 weeks of resting as radiant light, how do we practice that? You're welcome to come to these Sunday evening class discussions about this. And it's basically inconceivable. That's why we say it's kind of secret. Secret from us. It's the Buddha's secret. It's being revealed all the time, but it sometimes seems secret to us or hidden to us. But in fact, it's perfectly obvious and revealed, in fact, this light. Like the light that's filling the room right now, the radiant light that's filling the room. We can't exactly see the light. We see a lot of stuff in the room, but that's like the objects that the light is illuminating, those are easy to see, at least if we're not blind. all the stuff that we see is illuminated by light. Look at all this stuff. Look at all of us, illuminated beings. But it's harder to see the light that is illuminating us, isn't it? Can't really see it. You might say, what about those things? Those three things, and the flame on the altar. Are those the light that's illuminating us? And I would say more like the light that we're talking about here is even in this image of physical light that we're talking about, is like the light that's radiating from the light bulbs and candles. It's not the light bulbs and candles themselves. And the light that's radiating from them, that's illuminating us, that one we can't really see. And yet, it's totally obviously apparent, isn't it? If it wasn't, it would be totally dark and we wouldn't see anything. So we know that the room is filled with radiant light. And we can see the signs of it. We can see the effects of the radiant light, such as all the stuff we can see. We know the light's shining or we wouldn't be able to see anything, and yet we only see those are like the effects of the light. The seen images are just the almost like side effect of the radiant light. But they're also, they remind us that there is light filling this room. Dogen, in this essay, quotes a story from an old Buddha named Yunmen, who said to the Zen assembly, "Every one of you, every one of us has a light, but when you look for it, it's dark and obscure, like hidden, like secret." Even this physical light we're talking about, right? You could say, every one of us is illuminated by this light, but when you look for the light itself, it's dark and obscure. Or, hidden. If you look for it as another one of the illuminated things, like the people and the objects in the room, then you can't see it. And then Yunmen asks, so and what is everyone's light, this light that we all have? And no one could answer. How could they? But Yunmen tried anyway to answer on their behalf and said, the Zendo, the Dokusan room, the garage, and the kitchen. We could say, these bodies appearing on round cushions, these are the light. You might say, but I thought Kokyo just said these are the things illuminated by the light. They're not the light itself. But actually, if we start looking more closely and experientially, we see that the things illuminated by the light are not something other than the light itself. They seem to be objects illuminated by light, but that's not really something other than the light that's illuminating them. So we can unpack this more if you'd like to come to this class. And another story that Dogen brings up in this essay is another old Buddha named Changsha, who says the entire universe in all 10 directions. 10 directions is this old Indian way of talking about all directions. I heard that I think at some point that the Indians discovered the decimal system, and they thought it was really cool, because you know how it is, you can just you can take a one and just add a zero to it, and then it's like it's times 10, and you can add another zero, and it just keeps growing exponentially very easily with just these two numbers, a one and a zero. You can combine them and get very expansive and very contractive easily. And so this sense of being able to vastly quickly expand and vastly quickly contract in a very flexible way is part of Buddha Dharma theory. So they thought this decimal system, we can use this in our teachings about how things are. So that they got into things like in the 10 directions. It's kind of like 10 almost symbolizes like everything, and you can easily add as many zeros as you want. Zero is not much of anything to add anyway, but that makes it infinite. People thought 10 was a cool number. So they say 10 directions. We could say like, you know, 360 directions, but they were just into 10. Sometimes they say north, south, east, west, the in-between, like northwest, southeast, and so on, and then up and down are the last two. So the whole universe in 10 directions is the radiant light of the self. So what is this self? It's a big topic in Buddhism, and it gets used in various different ways. Sometimes we'd say, well, there is no self, actually. But here it seems to be used in a more positive way, and a kind of mysterious way, similar to the question of when Yunmen said, everybody has a light, but when you look for it, you can't see it. What is this light? That light is, in a way, we could say it's another name for the self, ourself, because it similarly, we could say every one of us has a self, not a fixed, small, contracted, limited identity, but like our true self. Our true self, what is that? When you look for it, it's dark and obscure, isn't it? Like, if I say, Stan, what is yourself, actually? Or who are you, really? And then, if you look for it, what do you find? The universe looking through a pair of eyes. And what is that? How could that possibly be?
The universe wants to see itself.
So, but if you try to like get a hold of that universe, that kind of get it, like pick it up, this self, like, or see that universe that looks through your eyes, see it as another object, like your hand or foot or you can't see the universe right as something, therefore you could say it's dark and obscure. That self that we truly are is ungraspable. We could call it, provisionally we could call it the universe, looking through our eyes, but what is that really? Yeah, so it's in that way it's kind of hidden as another one of the objects to get a hold of. But what is that light, or what is that self? that's looking through your eyes. You could say it's if you happen to be looking at the kitchen, it's the kitchen. If you look at the Dokusan room, it's the Dokusan room. So those things are yourself, your light, your radiant light. So Changsha said, the whole universe in 10 directions is the radiant light of the self. And almost like, I think, we could say synonyms. Again, we can explore this in as we look at Dogen's essay. Is the radiant light another name for the self, our true self? And so Changsha said that the whole universe in 10 directions is the radiant light of the self. The whole universe in the 10 directions is within the radiant light of the self. Just a slightly different meditation one could do to add in the word within. It's, we might say, we usually maybe think that without an investigation that myself is something within this vast universe, but this kind of reverses it. The whole universe is within the radiant light of myself. And then Changsha says, in the whole universe in 10 directions, there's not a single person who is not myself. What's that stardust made of?
The stuff that was there before the Big Bang.
Before the Big Bang, there was stuff. I don't know about that.
Blew up.
Well, here we're talking about a radiant light that we cannot see. And we can explore in this class. I might have to do some homework to study what the physicists say about light, because you know it's a little different than what the Buddhists say about light, but I think there's some similarities. Yeah. So anyway, we could say that the innermost practice focus is to abide as the radiant light of our true self. And that one's kind of secret. There's no sign-up sheet for that one. But we could spend these 5 weeks really devoted to such a practice and realization. And that you might say, well, why would we bother with that? And the other two sound pretty good. having these virtues of kindness and generosity and harmlessness, and also sitting zazen every day with a little clock, and these things all seem good. But I would propose that all three of these types of practice focus, three aspects of this practice focus, support each other. So the more we can rest as the radiant light of our true self, I would propose, this is my faith, my trust, is that generosity comes forth from being the light that we are. And the Bodhisattva precepts shine forth from being the light wholeheartedly, taking up and abiding as the light that we are. And even like things like daily zazen, I think actually the commitment to daily zazen, even when we're busy and we have better things to do, that still the radiant light shining through sometimes says, actually, Kokyo, you don't have anything better to do really right now than to just stop and sit here and remember me, radiant light. And in fact, your job in this lifetime and every lifetime is your primary job. I say, on the radiant light speaking, the radiant light say, your job, Kokyo, is to remember me.
And
remember me?
No, be me.
Be me. Well, you remember me and then be me. Yeah. Be me. You are me, but you got to remember to be me. What's that?
You have to be you before you can remember you.
Yeah. But luckily we don't have such a it's not such a job to be us. We already got that part. It's given by the light. So it's kind of one of those things. That's why it's kind of hidden secret practice, because it's like not something we can do because we're already it. And yet we know what it's like when we're not listening to the light. We're not obeying the command of our true self. We're not serving the host of this light, thinking that we can just like do our own thing. So anyway, welcome to Practice Focus, the spring Practice Focus, with all these aspects. Do you have any questions or? Yes, Caroline.
Thank you. From a moment ago, you mentioned the light shining through, the radiant light shining through. And it struck me that the through is just as important or equally a participant in what we're speaking about, that in some way we are the vehicle for the through, for the shining through, for the transmission, we might say. We're in a sense, conduits.
What do you mean by we?
Oh, all of us beings.
Like in the individual embodied people.
Selves are not so much solid in some sense, but the vehicle for what comes through in the shining through. Would that fit with what you was?
If you mean like these kind of body and mind packages, that kind of we, because we got to be careful in the Dharma language, when we say like I or we, because I was just using the word self or I to mean actually the light itself, right? It's one way of talking about who we are, actually the light. And then you could say there's another we, as long as we clarify what we're talking about, that's like this body and mind. And we could say the we that's the light shines through the we that's the body and mind. Five skandhas.
That seems not personal or impersonal in that way, but it's a passage.
Yeah, the light is not personal, and yet it expresses itself in a very personal way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we could say the light comes through this body and mind, but that if we say it like that, then we have to be careful not to think that there is a body and mind apart from the light, that then you turn on the light and it comes through the body and mind.
Oh, I wasn't suggesting it.
Well, we just have to, you know, look carefully when we're examining experience.
Yes.
So I think I would say more like the light expresses itself as this body and mind. There isn't a body and mind until the light manifests itself as this body and mind. That's a little less, to me, putting it that way is a little less like saying, well, there's a body, like a sort of like a body, like a corpse, and then you can kind of like animate it with this light. It's more like there isn't really a body and mind other than the light. But the light takes this very particular form called this body and mind and that body and mind. And And you could say shines through it, but again, just like, you know, being careful with language, I would maybe change through to as. The light shines as this body and mind. See how there's like a slightly different feeling? Even, and these, hopefully, this kind of talk, when we're looking at words like this, we're referring to our actual direct experience. And we can say, oh, that feels, it tweaks my, my perspective on my experience right now. To say, okay, here's the experience of the inconceivable radiant light shining through this body and mind experience versus actually opening to, here's the radiant light shining inconceivably as this particular body and mind. Could people follow that distinction? Yes.
You were talking about the light that we can see, or the objects we can see in this room. And the reason we're able to see anything in this room is because there are objects, including the walls, dust in the air, the filaments and the globe around the light bulb, the atoms and the gas and the flame. Or you can say the reason we can see the light is because all of those objects have surfaces that the light bounces off or reflects off. I was just reading recently a character when the Buddha talked about Nirvana. I think he mostly spoke in terms of what it wasn't. Saying that it was either, it's been translated as an extinguishing, or I think more literally, he said it was an unbinding. Because in those days, they thought of a fire as being bound to fuel.
Yes.
And Nirvana was unbinding, releasing the fire from the fuel. But he did, apparently, in a few ways, speak in a positive way about Nirvana. And he said, like you're saying, that it's a kind of consciousness, there is a kind of consciousness or awareness after awakening, but it's not the kind of consciousness that's one of the aggregates. It doesn't arise and cease. It's not dependent on causes and conditions. And apparently, and this is supposedly a direct quote, he likened it to a light, you know, passing through space without landing on anything. And the quote is, light without surface.
Ah.
That is how he described the awareness or the type of consciousness that exists after awakening.
Yes.
Light.
Yes. It's not the fifth skanda.
No.
Consciousness. With the cessation of consciousness, there's the cessation of the six senses and so on in the awakening of the Buddhas. And yet, yeah, this light that doesn't come and go, as you speak of, with no surface. And which relates to Carolyn's question, I think we could say, if there's something for the light to shine through, that would be could be seen as a kind of a surface. Whereas if what we call surfaces are the light, actually, they are manifestations, expressions, play of light, then there are no surfaces. As the Heart Sutra says, no eyes, no ears, no tongue, no body, no mind, no surfaces. I think it says that. But it doesn't say there's no light, actually. In fact, it says that even though there aren't all those things, it says all bodhisattvas and all Buddhas throughout past, present, and future, they all actually do rely on something, interestingly.
It says what? No mind consciousness, but the consciousness that it's talking about there is not to be.
Yeah, there's no, yeah, there's no consciousness.
But they, and
the Buddhas rely on something though. Do you know what they rely on? That's right. They rely on prajnaparamita. And this prajnaparamita, the lovely, the holy, she brings light. Yeah, and here we can call it.
And that's, I think that's the radiant awareness that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Or we can call it prajnaparamita. She is a source of light. And from everyone in the triple world of surfaces, she removes hindrance and dark, the gloom and darkness of delusion. When you look for this light as another surface, like that's how we look for, at things, right? We look at them as surfaces. If we look for the light as a surface, it's dark and obscure, just gets confusing. It's, we're not going to find it as a surface. But what is this light? It is, manifesting, it is expressing itself as all the surfaces in the universe and as stardust, as Stan says. I would say the stardust is not the light, but the light can...
Needs stardust to shine through.
I don't know if it needs to appear in, as a surface, we could say the first surfaces that it expressed itself as or stardust, something like that. It's not really that it need, it doesn't really need anything, because if it did, it would be conditioned, right? But in order to dance, there needs to be surfaces of a hand to, like, need another hand, and then you have a dance. But there doesn't need to be a dance. Some might say there does. But that's a question, an open question. We can leave us with this evening. Does there need to be a dance? Or can there just be light? Apparently, yeah. That's a good answer. What's that?
Does there need to be a nirmanakaya?
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the same question, right? Yeah. And probably there's, you know, differing opinions on this. But we like, I mean, I like, and I think you like, that there does need to be. Otherwise we wouldn't be here. We are, the light, I don't know, if we say the light is choosing to express itself as us. See, this is where it gets really great if we start exploring this, because again we can like examine the language, and as soon as we have like there's an us that's brought here by the light, then we can start to veer off a little bit and think that there's something here called us that's kind of like that the light's bringing, rather than this language again of kind of manifestation. Dogen, it's maybe Dogen's favorite word in the Shobogenzo. One of them, like probably at least half the essays in the Shobogenzo use this term genjo. That means like manifestation or expression or actualization. So I think it's really kind of a trademark of Dogen's style of teaching and his understanding is that everything is this actualization or expression of may our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.